Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, we are looking at technology in Africa. We're looking at technology investment, and we are just considering what role technology has played during this current crisis that everyone is facing, and what some of the possible opportunities could be in the industry. And we are honored to have our special guest for today is Cathy Smith, who is managing director at enterprise software company that is SAP, and she runs their Africa division. Cathy, how are you?
I am very well, thank you, and a very special thank you for having me on your talk show today. I really appreciate it.
No. We certainly do appreciate you being with us today. I think just as a starting point, I think a lot of people might be in offices right now or might be doing some work and don't fully understand or realize that they are likely using some system that your company, you know, has developed. SAP is one of the biggest enterprise software companies in the world. Could you give us a snapshot of what SAP's operation looks like on the continent, and you know, perhaps what your, you know, area of responsibility is in this, what some may call a behemoth of a global organization?
Yeah, no, thank you, Madiwa. I think you are absolutely right. You know, SAP is quite well used across the world. And many people may not realize that they're using an SAP system, whether it's for enterprise resource planning or for HR, procurement. There's a range of different transactions that many employees and employers work with across businesses. In fact, I think it's just over 70% of the world's business transactions run through some form of SAP system. And what's fantastic about SAP is that it's not just a global company for Europe and the US, but it has a very strong presence in Africa. And we have split Africa into two main parts, the French-speaking Africa and the English-speaking Africa. And I like to call about the English-speaking Africa as a mix between Southern and Central Africa. And so we have a very strong investment and presence in Nigeria, which represents our hub for West Africa. We have a strong presence in East Africa, which has our hub in Kenya, and in the Portuguese-speaking countries, which is so interesting because I've said we look after English-speaking countries, but I do have a Portuguese geographical responsibility, and we have a hub in Angola for the Portuguese-speaking countries. And in Southern Africa, we have our hub in Johannesburg, and we have a satellite branch in Cape Town. So we're very nicely spread around the continent, and I think most people will recognize it as Sub-Saharan Africa, and that's where my main responsibility is at this time.
Now, it does sound like you do have quite a wide area of responsibilities. So I'm sure you have quite an interesting vantage point when it comes to how COVID-19 has had an effect on, you know, business, because you guys also concentrated in the enterprise segment. So what have you seen, I guess, in the last maybe 2 to 3 months, you know, perhaps leading up to, you know, the various lockdowns in different countries, and also, you know, going through that period, and now as, you know, economies around the world are starting to open themselves up, you know, what have you noticed, what have you observed, you know, and what has, you know, perhaps surprised you along the way?
Well, actually, you know, Madiwa, it's been a fascinating experience, and I think there's been a range of different observations that we've had from the beginning to where we're at the minute. And maybe to give some context, I think in the beginning, I sensed almost like a level of shock that happened. And this we would say across the board, where people were just couldn't believe that this was happening. I had some customers in East Africa who just couldn't believe this was happening. They went almost into a state of paralysis. Some of our customers put all of their key decision-making meetings on hold. Some of them were so completely unprepared, and this is generally across sub-Saharan Africa, that when their staff had to work from home, they actually didn't work. They were just at home because they were not prepared in terms of how they would get business continuity happening. And that state of, I would almost call it shock, lasted just for a couple of weeks before the realization hit that, you know, we have to figure a way out and how to get things moving. In parallel, we had some amazing customers who just got on with it. You know, they adapted to the change and they just made sure that they were able to continue with their business. And I could see a thread, particularly at an industry level. So, you know, the industries that had to act really quickly, like the retail industry, very quick response on how to get things going, making sure that we had all of our services up and running and available. And we had solutions, even though we were all in lockdown, to make sure that they were able to provide services. So retail, as you know, is one of the critical services we had, especially from a consumer goods point of view from the beginning. And then, of course, some of our customers who were in the technology space, they adapted incredibly quickly to the new world. But then there was also a very interesting underlying thread around survival. And we saw many companies, as they were trying to deal with the challenges that they were in and figuring out how they could survive, becoming a lot more innovative around how they were going to respond to the conditions that we were under. I mean, some examples, I'm sure you've seen some examples of the bottling companies who would be typically distributing alcohol and could no longer do that in South Africa. I'm trying to figure out how they could support the consumer retail businesses on distributing using their infrastructure. And then, of course, in another innovative way, if a service was being provided, and I'll just use a simple example like hairdressing salons can no longer provide that service, how they move their business much more towards providing the sale of products. So two interesting themes coming on: innovation, trying to think differently, and then, of course, survival, making sure whether it's to survive just to keep your business alive or to make sure that your business was able to thrive and provide a good service to your customers and your consumers has been a key thread that we've seen coming across the board. And then one last overarching point I want to comment on what we've seen is a really amazing increased level of collaboration. So, you know, because the pandemic has had such a fundamental impact on every single one of us, both at a personal level as well as a business level, at a national level in each of our countries, we've seen a more openness towards collaboration, towards dialogue, towards finding solutions to problems. So even if it's a case of trying to fix an issue related to a company that's really trying to survive through this difficult time, the willingness to engage, to be open, has been quite phenomenal.
It certainly does sound like there's been a lot of adaptation, like you said. Also, the collaborations that you're talking about, just in response, especially after that initial shock of, you know, what's going on, what's happening. But looking more internally, as SAP, you know, in Africa, and given the fact that you're not only looking after South Africa, but, you know, all of these different countries in sub-Saharan Africa, what has it been like leading an organization, you know, during this time, you know, because you have to ensure safety, you now have to think about your clients as well, you have to think about remote working. What has it been like?
I will say, Modiwa, that it has been incredibly challenging, and at the same time, it's been very rewarding. And let me share with you why challenging. So outside of the fact that I lead several different countries on the continent, and I'm responsible for their health and safety, we tend to become quite myopic in that, you know, Johannesburg and South Africa and Johannesburg in particular can become all-consuming. So, I mean, the first rule was to always keep a holistic view. But I don't know if you're aware of this, but SAP was the first company in South Africa to close its doors and ask staff to work from home as a result of COVID-19. And this happened in the very beginning of March of this year. And making that decision, I'll never forget, it was a Sunday afternoon. The reason we had to make this decision is because two of our staff were potentially, had been identified as potentially been exposed to a patient number two in the country. And luckily, I can tell you in advance, very luckily, neither individual was infected. So we're very grateful for that. But at the time when we did not have any knowledge around what the outcome would be, I mean, we had to make that really important decision on what to do. And very late into that Sunday night, we made the decision to close all our offices. And that was ahead of everybody else. And we were in the press because of this. And I know some people thought that we're a bit crazy. And you go home at night thinking, did I do the right thing? But, and of course, in hindsight, we know that we did the best possible thing. And I will share with you that we had to rely on a couple of things. One, in our core values, our people, our customers, and our partners, as you refer to them, were pivotal in our decision-making. And it was in that context that we were very clear around the fact that we had to make the decision on that basis.
And then I guess extending, you know, that particular thought, given the challenges, you know, the lockdowns, you were the first, like you said, has going through this period changed in any way SAP's attitude towards technology investment? I'm asking that because technology companies, you know, have found themselves in a very, you know, interesting position because just looking at what's been going on around the world, you have companies like your Tencent, like your Zoom, you know, Microsoft, all, you know, just reporting that there's been an increase in demand for, you know, services. And I'm guessing that as more people work from home, whatever solutions SAP has have to also, you know, bear that burden of people working from home, accessing things from the cloud, that sort of thing. So how has the crisis affected your attitude? Because the other thing I've seen is that you now see companies taking away their guidance. I think DataTech came out with its results this morning, and they've just said we're not giving any forward guidance anymore because of all the uncertainty. So where are you guys, you know, with on that side, and where do you see things going from there?
I think the point about uncertainty is 100% valid, Modiwa. And if I just go back to the leadership of the situation internally, and then just come back to the guidance set and where we at from a view and from a technology investment point of view, I want to just clarify that. You know, when we're making a decision or running the business in this very uncertain times, the importance of making sure that staff are completely engaged, as well as the customers and partners in our ecosystem, are fully informed, and communication is clearly in line with what we are driving. We have to take an overarching view of being responsible. So this is a very challenging time for all companies. It's a challenging time for our customers. Our partners are really facing many battles as a result of this. And of course, we as SAP have been impacted as well. So the first port of call is to be very responsible and to look at our customers and find a way for us to really drive something that supports them in the first instance, to make sure that they are able to conduct their business in the most convenient ways. The interesting thing about the impact of COVID-19 and the adoption of technologies, from an SAP perspective, it has been almost a seamless experience for our staff. We are a very mobile organization. Our HR policy is very much to measure output and impact as opposed to time in the office, so work anywhere, anytime. We migrated into the use of video very simply because often we have on a daily basis meetings and calls with customers and partners across the world. And if you just think about my role, as we look after customers in Nigeria or Kenya, I have to have meetings with them as well. So that that adjustment for us as an organization has been very simple. But we know that, as I said in the beginning, some of our customers have not had a very easy experience around that. And we've had to take on this role of being responsible. So, you know, on the one hand is to help customers the best way possible to navigate through this. And we, as many other IT companies, have made available access to tools that are very relevant at this point in time, often at no cost for a period of time or at a very, very reduced rate. And some examples would be how we're helping customers with understanding what's happening with their staff. So we've got a solution around tracking the pulse of employee engagement, solutions around supply chain management. And there's been a plethora of this, both from SAP and from many of the other IT companies that said, let's be responsible and help customers navigate through the time this time to make it easier for them to be successful. At the very same time, what we're also recognizing is that COVID-19 and the drive towards using technology has become almost like a catalyst that's going to and is accelerating the need for adoption of technology in a more pervasive manner. And that's both from an employee use point of view to be productive. So how do I work anywhere, anytime using technology? And very similarly, how do I run my business processes so that if anything like this ever happened again, or if this situation, as many of us forecast, is going to happen for a much longer period of time, and the opportunity for us to import hardware is going to become more and more restricted, we believe that this is going to be accelerating the need to move towards cloud-based solutions. The reality of our world today is almost an always-on world, and so being able to be connected, to be able to run your business process, is becoming really quite urgent. And the way to go absolutely is to drive investments of organizations into more cloud-based solutions, which allows for more flexibility, it's more cost effective, and it does allow a better capability for being able to have a better chance at business continuity.
It definitely sounds like cloud is an opportunity that you guys as SMP have identified. What other areas of opportunity do you see in the market, particularly for the African sector? Because not all geographies are the same. So what opportunities do you see for technology in Africa? And are there any, threats? I think COVID-19 itself is a threat, but outside of that, are there any, perhaps hindrances that you see on the horizon that may hinder some of that investment that you're talking about in Africa?
It's so interesting because what we all recognize is that Africa is the continent that has adopted mobile technology almost better than any part of the world. And yet, the move to the cloud has been the slowest, particularly in countries north of South Africa's borders. And a lot of the reason for that has been legislative or regulations that have been much more of a hindrance, particularly as relates to data privacy. And it's almost as though we are straddling two worlds, right? Because many of us across the continent are actually using solutions and services that are based in the cloud. And it's almost as though we don't recognize that. So if you just think about Gmail as an example, is a cloud-based solution. And I think that's a very pervasive tool that's used across the continent. And yet when it comes to how do we move things into the cloud for other solutions, we see a lot more resistance. And as I said, it's definitely around regulation. I think this is the undoubted opportunity for Africa, for all our countries in Africa, to accelerate the transition to using digital technology so that African as companies, as countries, are better able to play in this digital economy. And the need for this is becoming really important because our focus, of course, has to be around how do we help some of the many issues we have in countries around poverty, hunger, inclusion, a plethora of different issues that we have within different countries on the continent. But the move towards cloud and getting services done in an automated way is undoubtedly our opportunity, so that we can then start to use technology not only to play in the digital economy, but to be able to address some of the societal issues that we know are prevalent in many countries on the continent.
One of the things that you sort of highlighted in the beginning when you were talking about the size and scope of your responsibility is that sometimes there is a danger of getting sort of drawn into everything that's going on in Johannesburg, in South Africa, and, you know, concentrating on that. So keeping with that theme, you know, what's your outlook for the South African economy? There are a lot of economic projections, you know, very negative ones that are coming. You have a reserve bank that's you know, that's cutting interest rates left, right and center. You have stimulus coming from the government. You have consumers that are under pressure, businesses under pressure. How are you feeling about the economy in South Africa and I guess the broader African economy as a whole going forward?
Yeah, so that's a really fantastic question, Amadiwa. I think that, you know, COVID-19 has had such a fundamental impact on the world that I think it's a time for us to really take a step back, because we can get so consumed by a lot of the negativity that that is prevalent in our world today. And I mean, one of the biggest challenges we work in to manage better with, even within our own organization, is this rising fear of what the future is going to look like. And we have to take a step back for us to move forward. And some of my views around what I think could be possible in the future, it's really, and I would make this not only for South Africa, but also for all countries in on the continent. There is a real opportunity for us to drive inclusivity in our economy at this point in time. I believe that social enterprises are one of the most important parts of the solution to a new economy. Social enterprises are organizations that do business and they are revenue-based organization driving profit, but their business is all about doing good. And I talked about collaboration earlier on in our conversation. I think that nothing's going to be the same today. Nothing's going to be the same going forward. And if we take the time to step back and reflect, and we look at a changing economy and the role of social enterprises, because our problem that we are highlighting is absolutely around the economy, but there are also some very profound humanitarian issues that also need to be addressed. And there has to be a different approach in terms of how we construct the new norm, the new dawn, whatever we want to call it, as we navigate through this crisis and go into a new platform for living as different societies. I think that there is going to, of course, be many challenges that we have to navigate, but the opportunity for us to really make the change is now. And I think that Africa is so perfectly positioned. Our ability to adapt to difficult circumstances, the natural resources we have on our continent, the fact that we have such a young, amazingly young population across the continent are all amazing ingredients that I think could undoubtedly change the game for us in South Africa and in all the other countries we have on the continent, and that we can come out of this even stronger than what we are at today.
So that's been it with us. We're talking to Kathy Smith, who is the Managing Director for Enterprise Software Companies, SAP Africa, and just giving us what it's been like to lead an organization of their size during this crisis. As you heard, she is responsible for a number of different sub-Saharan African countries, and she was also just talking about, you know, just ensuring health and safety of the workers, and also advocating that this has been a good time to drive the adoption of cloud, because African economies and African people as a whole have been very good at leapfrogging the rest of the world in adopting mobile technology, but slow in terms of adopting cloud technology, which she says is the future, and that this time is a good time to drive up that adoption. She also just highlights the fact that a social enterprise might be a very good way for us to address some of the more humanitarian issues that have come to the fore as a result of COVID-19, and especially as we reimagine what economies are going to be looking like in this new dawn. Kathy, as a parting shot, your advice for business leaders that may be feeling the weight and the stress of the world right now, given all of the uncertainty?
My advice is to that we all recognize that we are not alone in this, that we will persevere through this very challenging time. And as leaders of our people, make sure we stay close to them, that we maintain a high level of empathy, not only to our staff, but also to our respective customers and other stakeholders. Everybody will be feeling a level of fear at this time. Recognize it. Have the confidence to know that we will survive. And please, everybody, look after your health. Thank you very much, Madiwa.
We will survive, and life will go on. That is the message coming from Kathy Smith, Managing Director of SAP Africa.
This is Madiwa's Take.
An absolutely enlightening discussion with Kathy Smith from SAP Africa. It's always good to get business leaders' thoughts on some of these issues as and when they are happening. You heard her talking about the adoption of cloud computing, and also just advocating more social enterprise. And that's one of the issues that I personally wanted to touch on, because in previous shows we have highlighted and I've spoken about the fact that there will need to be a more empathetic form of economics going forward, simply because the status quo, the way that things have always run and been managed, is unlikely to suffice, at least in the short term, at least over the next 12 months, until things stabilize. There needs to be a more compassionate form of economics that we have in South Africa and in countries around the world. And I like the fact that Kathy is highlighting social enterprise. Social enterprises, as she said, are basically just organizations that have a profit motive, but at the same time, coupled with that, they have a motive to do good. So if you think about the one I've always liked using is Tom's Shoes. I don't know if they're still a thing as much, but they were the nice little shoes. I think they were called alpargatas back in the day. And basically for each shoe sold, the company would give, I think it was $1 towards $1 or one pair of shoes towards children that don't have shoes in South America, for example. So in driving sales, the more they sold their shoes, the more that they were direct recipients of aid, because you knew that with each pair of shoes, there's someone in South America who's getting a free pair of shoes. So it's that sort of economics that's going to be needed during this time. And it's good to see how business and government have come together quite a bit to, you know, start helping people. But more than anything else, we just hope that that spirit remains, because there tends to be a fatigue that comes in sometimes. You start off gung-ho about helping people, but after some time you perhaps get tired and things like that. But it's always good if everyone gets on board with the same goal, same issues, and then we drive forward on that agenda. So that brings us to the end of this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.